Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two things are one and the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as audio and video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA and their yearly conference, please go to pnwa.org. So my guest today, Dori Ostermiller, is the author of the novel Outside the Ordinary World and also a teacher, actually the founder of Writers in Progress, which is in Massachusetts. And I interviewed Dori last year, about a year and a half ago, when she released Outside the Ordinary World, and I thought it was a great conversation. And she's a wonderful writer, but she, like I said, she's also a teacher, and there is something about being a teacher of something you love to do that enhances your understanding of it, I think, because to take something like writing, which is so internal and often so intuitive, and have to translate into it into something that other people can understand often deepens your own understanding of it and can make you a wonderful conversationalist sometimes on that very topic, which is why I was so glad to have Dori back on the show with me. Dori, welcome to Author.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
You know, what do you think about that, Dori? I was just talking about the fact that you're teaching, you teach writing, which is a nice way to make a living as an author, but also, as I mentioned, a great way to deepen your own understanding of what you do. It's certainly been the case for me. Have you found that to be the case?
I have, and, you know, actually I find myself wanting to teach workshops about the things that I really need to learn, which is sort of cheating in a way, but it's...
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's been great for me. I remember when I first started teaching writing workshops right out of my MFA program, what I was really looking for was permission and inspiration, because the MFA program that I went to was much more nuts and bolts, you know, about final, you know, finished products and getting published, and there was a lot of pressure. So it sort of shut me down. And when I came out of school, I wanted to have permission to just make a mess and do what I needed to do. So I started teaching workshops with that in mind. You know, I'm just going to create a very safe place, a non-competitive place, and talk about, you know, how do we get out of our own way and just let this stuff be born.
But you see what you did, Dori? Do you see what you did? You did just what a writer should do when they write a book. I think the best way for a writer to write a book is to say, what's the book I want to see on the shelf that's not on the shelf? And then you go and write that book. You find the book that you write the book that you wish you could read. So you created the writing workshop that you wished you could take.
That I wished I could take. That's right. Because that
was
really.
And I write
really
the daily column for Author, and I said I want to write a column about writing that I always wanted to read.
That's right.
That's what I did.
Yeah. So you focus on this question too about getting out of your own way and
how
do you do that and what. It's so tricky. I find it incredibly tricky stuff.
It is. You know, one way that's really one focus I've used for myself that I stress with my to remind myself and with students when I'm teaching is to remember that the only legitimate question and you should ask while you're writing is, what do I want to say and have I said it? What do I want to say? But there's a lot of other questions that can float around, aren't there? Like, am I going to get this done in time for my editor? What would my agent think? Is this good enough to get published? And on and on and on. Just what would my mother think of it? Who knows? You know, the list is as endless
right.
as there are people. But none of those questions are legitimate. The only legitimate question is, what do I want to say? What does the scene want me to say or whatever, however you want to phrase
right.
that? And have I said it? And if you have, that's the end.
Right.
But anything
and
else
and I think
writing.
Even finding the answer to, you know, to the question, what do I want to say?
Exactly. Yeah,
it's really, you know, it requires showing up and being open to discovering that. I think, was it William Stafford who said he writes to find out what it is he wants to say? Because before he starts, he doesn't know,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think that's a big part of the process for me is figuring out, what is this about? It's like I have this little seed of an idea or an image or an event, and I need to write about it a lot before I figure out what it is that I'm trying to say about it. I don't know if that's true for you.
It is. In fact, you know, it's so funny. So after July 4th, my agent's going to go out with this memoir I finished a little while ago. And
congratulations.
Thank you very much. And it's about my relationship to my son. And what was interesting about that was the book was called No One Is Broken, because he's on the autism spectrum. And
uh-huh.
I knew that that was true. I knew it was true that no one was broken. I didn't know how I would reveal that that was true. I didn't even know why I knew it was true, really. But I knew I would have to write it and find out why. But so
right.
I went in knowing one truth, but having no idea how I would reveal that, which is I've never written in that way before.
Uh-huh.
Kind of backwards, but it's the same thing. As opposed to starting with a character and trying to say, find out why am I interested in that character, I had the sort of end point that I absolutely knew was true and I absolutely knew was valid, but I did not know how to reveal it. But whenever I had a question, I would think about no one is broken, what that meant to me, and the next thing would come to me. So I had
wow.
to discover it. It was fascinating
wow.
to write. Because my own life. I had to
yeah.
learn about it, you know.
So is this your first memoir?
It is, but I think, and I'm going to write another one, actually, after this. I seem to have found what pleases me most right now, and it seems to be me. Well, I shouldn't say, actually, it's not me, but using my life as a novelist would characters, you know,
uh-huh.
what I find, and I love it.
Yeah,
cool.
I mean, there's that magical place where, you know, fiction intersects with your own experience and with what really drives you and motivates you, and I think that's what every fiction writer has to find too. But memoir
you
always seems really difficult.
You must see that really a lot in your classes, right? A lot of people.
Sorry.
You must see it in your seminars that you teach. People coming with their sort of sometimes thinly veiled memoirs that they're turning into fiction.
Yes, and what I see a lot of too is people not really knowing what they want to say about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, I have this experience. I really want to write about it, but I don't know how to make it a story.
Right.
It's not a story yet. And then trying to figure out, well, what's the story in this? You know, how can we find the story? And what is it that most moves you about this?
Yeah.
And sometimes, again, it takes a lot of work of just showing up and getting out of your way and getting the words down before you even have a clue about why this is important to you.
Yeah.
I think the very, you know, language itself is, there's something about language itself that sort of sometimes limits your creativity because it's so rational. And,
it can appear rational, can't it?
It can, and there's that battle, right, between the rational mind and the creative mind,
yeah.
and how do you get the two to wed? I think
yes.
for me that's the biggest issue in writing. It's and how do you stop rationalizing and critiquing long enough to really let something organic happen.
Because you cannot, no story, I've realized, there's that great line by Leonard Cohen from the song Anthem, where he says,
mm-hmm.
add up the parts, you won't find the sum. And that's what a story's like. It doesn't make sense intellectually,
mm-hmm.
really, if you look at it the way the deconstructionists did in the 80s or whatever. It doesn't make sense, except it
mm-hmm.
does in its own way. It's such
mm-hmm.
a felt thing. And if you try to figure it out intellectually, it falls apart. Because
right.
every story has its own emotional logic to it. And in that way, really, you're feeling a story. You're not thinking it.
Right.
You're finding it. You're hearing it.
And how do you do that if you're, you know, if you have a deadline? and somebody's saying, what is this story about? Send me an outline.
And that's what you're dealing with now. So Dory finished Outside the Ordinary World. Outside the
right.
Ordinary World. That was, like I said, a year and a half ago. This was your debut novel, and you had written, but you had published short stories and so on in literary journals prior to that.
That's
right.
right. Mm-hmm.
But now she's got her next book underway, and she's got an actual contract for it, and this is a new challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a totally different beast, totally different. You know, just a different process, also that, you know, the first book. Big parts of it were based on my childhood, and so it was sort of difficult in some way, you know, more difficult in some ways emotionally, but in other ways I knew what I wanted to write about and I knew what the story was. You know, it was very familiar turf for me.
Right.
Now I'm writing something that's that's much more fictional and something that I really have to imagine my way into more with multiple character perspectives. And so it's a really big leap for me. You know, and I'm trying to find what the mind of the story is and what and how it wants to move and whose perspective wants to be present. But my, you know, my publisher, and rightly so, because they're in the business of this, is saying, well, what's it about and where's the outline and can you write me a synopsis? And, you know, I'm really struggling with those two approaches.
Did you write the first one with an outline or some kind of like a grand plan? No, that's not how you work.
No, I never used an outline. But, you know, the first one took me much longer than maybe it could have if I'd been more.
Don't say that. You don't know that.
I don't know that. No,
you don't
know
that. You know,
there
are writers. I know one, this woman named Susan Wingate, who I think took her 10 years to write her first novel, which she didn't outline, and then 6 months to write her second one, which she did. But she's an accountant by trade, and she likes outlines. But I tell you, if you're an outliner, then outline. And if you are not, do not waste your time with it. It will only...
With it.
It will just get into your... You'll get into your head. Because
seems
I would
like
assume
it could get
you're
in your way in some ways. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. If you can't work with them, it gets in your way. Because I've learned for myself, I don't... you know, even Dory, if I am out on a jog and I have an idea, say, for the next scene in the book I'm going to write, that idea is different than what I do not presume that it will work until I actually start writing it. No matter how beautiful it seems in the little cocoon of my brain, once
brain
you actually
while you're
write
jogging.
It for me, that's when I learn whether it belongs there or not.
Huh. So it's in the actual process of getting it on the page that you figure that out.
I have to see what's there, word for word. You know how that thing, you open up that part of yourself and then something comes and there's little parts you didn't, little gaps you couldn't fill in, and those gaps suggest things, and do you follow them? So if you work that way intuitively, you got it's a different discipline, that's all.
Yeah, I feel a little bit cramped in that respect with this one, you know, because I do feel like, oh, wow, I've got all this external pressure now and people asking for pages and people looking over my shoulder and giving me suggestions. And you know, so there's a way that my critical mind is too present. And I'm every day, you know, the struggle for me when I show up is, okay, how do I just step out of my way and forget the deadline and forget the contract and just let this story tell itself, because I know it's in there,
of course,
but it's been really difficult to find it.
Yes,
I think the harder you try sometimes, the more evasive it feels.
It is, and of course, when you're writing, you have no matter what your deadline is and contract and money and all that, when you write, none of that can be present because a contract isn't a story. Isn't a character? It's none of it. It's. I understand it's a part of the business world, but you know, just like how you have to turn off any argument you might have had with your children or husbands before you sit down to write, or any plans for a vacation, or what all the little
details.
Yeah, that just go on in the all stories exist so far beneath the surface of that kind of chatter. And really, all the publishing stuff is on that level as, you know, a part of our daily life as it is. It's not a part of the experience of writing.
Yes. I had this interesting experience the other night. I started a new workshop that's on craft. It's on, you know, narrative structure. And I gave people an exercise that was very sort of crafty, you know.
Yes.
It was like, you know, we're going to create setting details that, you know, move the story forward, and you know, there was, I realized afterwards in retrospect that I gave too many instructions and I talked too much about craft, and I had one writer who's a beautiful writer, you know, very poetic writer, who just shut down and he said, I can't write this way. I feel like I'm in English class again. And and it reminded me that, you know, that the story really can't come from that rational place where you're, you know, giving yourself instructions. It has to emerge somewhere else. So then the next week I came in and I had them do a free writing exercise to start and make a list, and, you know, it just freed people up so much more. So I find that very tricky, too. How do you teach craft? You know, how do you teach the nuts and bolts of craft without shutting people down?
Yes, it's a very good question, and I don't know, because I realize that, I mean, I have done some craft teaching, but I stray away from it because I always feel like you should teach the thing that was hardest for you to learn, because you'll understand what it takes to learn it. You'll understand the gap between not understanding it and understanding it, whereas the stuff that came easy to you, it's harder to know how you learned it. And so for me, I realize in retrospect how quickly the craft part of it came. I mean, really quickly for me. It was of no use to me because I was so screwed up with all the publishing stuff that I couldn't apply it. but in terms of just sentence-to-sentence level and what a story is, that I just learned at a very early age, you know, like my early 20s and stuff. And so I almost don't even know how it just seemed like, well, you tell a story, you know. I mean, it's pointless, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's harder for me to realize what I'm doing. But I'm very aware of what I'm doing in terms of when I start thinking certain kinds of thoughts and start becoming too intellectual. That was perhaps my biggest challenge, understanding that it just was not an intellectual experience.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me so wanted it to be because my
So what do you do? What do you do when that happens and you're writing along and suddenly you hear yourself getting too intellectual, too rational, too critical? You know, do you have certain tricks for yourself or techniques that...
Well, it's like a balancing act, and I have learned to understand, one of the great gifts to me has been writing this daily column for the magazine for the last 3 years, so I don't have time to question stuff and just have to trust, and so I have learned that certain kinds of thinking, certain kinds of questions don't belong there, and so when I hear them, I have learned over the years to say, no, thank you. But I will tell you, I had a profound moment in writing, and I'll tell this story quickly if I can, when I was writing No One Is Broken, where I was 12 chapters into draft number 4.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going fine, but it's a story of my son and me. And so there's his story, and there's my story. And, you know, and so when he was 5, I was, you know, 41. And when he was 6, I was 42. And I have the different events that happened when I was 42 and the event happened when he was 6, and on. So I'm combining these stories. And, of course, but all important, not just what we did, but, of course, the emotional arc, right? This happened and I changed in this way, and I learned this when that happened and so on. So I've been carefully laying it all out, or carefully it's been happening, it's been going along very nicely until I reached chapter 12 and I realized I was off by a year, that I had him having things happen to him a year after when they actually did happen to him, which was fine until it wasn't anymore, and I needed him to be the correct age. And I said, oh, God, right? And so I've got this agent waiting to see it, and on and on and on. And so I say, well, I'll just go back a chapter, and I'll straighten it out. Oh, okay, I guess I have to go back 2 chapters. Oh, I guess I had to go back to chapter 2 because everything was wrong. I mean, the scenes were all confused. Everything was in the wrong order, and I couldn't have learned what I wanted to learn, what I thought I learned at that time because I wasn't actually doing it and all this kind of thing.
Right.
So I, you know... Well, just, you know, this, my heart sunk, but I had these two thoughts simultaneously. The first thought, it was really like the angel-devil moment. The first thought was, and it came to my head immediately like a voice speaking to me, and that was, if you go back and rewrite it, it will make it better. It will make it better because this is what actually happened, and it will be better simply because what happened is the truth and you want to tell the truth. And that came to me immediately. And that was the first thought. And then the second thought was, don't screw it up again. Don't screw it up. And that was my intellectual mind saying, look what you did. You screwed it up. You weren't paying attention. Right? You didn't have an outline. Or even had an outline. I would look at it and I ignored it, saying, that looks wrong. Right? And that voice saying, don't screw it up. But the problem was this. I knew I was going to rewrite it. I knew I was going to rewrite it. I could not finish it. But if I chose to write it from the point of view of it will make it better, that's a joyous, like, that's an enthusiasm because I love the book and I want it to be as good as it can be. So that's one approach.
Right.
But if I write it from the point of view of don't screw it up, that's an impossibility because there is no end to the number of ways you can screw it up.
You can screw it up.
You can screw it up. Every word could be a screw up. And so I'd be writing in fear. But I couldn't tell which was the best way to do. And so I made the decision that I would write it from the point of view that it would make it better, even though I had no proof, even though I could not give my intellectual mind any proof that I would be okay if I went back and did it again.
Right.
Make it better. And it was
sounds like you're talking about faith, really. I mean,
exactly,
that's the difference between fear and curiosity or something. You know, it's because they can't sort of simultaneously exist.
They can't.
No, and as soon as you give into that fearful place that says, "Oh my God, you're going to screw this up, and this is going to be awful," and people, you know,
unanswerable.
The critics, yeah.
Here's the other thing, love. This is what I'm fond of. You know, evidence is great for science. It's not so good for fiction and art.
Right.
And that's because love, this is so true, love cannot be proven. Fear cannot be disproven. You can't prove love. You can't prove what you love, except that you love it. I can't prove that I love to write. Even though I do it, I could not love it. I guess I'll just be doing it. I've done a lot of things I didn't love, you know. And telling you you love someone you know isn't proof. Someone, I'm sure, has told you he loves you, maybe without meaning it. He might have wanted to, but he didn't, or whatever. Or you've done it, even. And you can't disprove fear. Fear can just worm its way around anything.
That's right. There are always reasons to fear.
it's always the future, right?
That's right. No
the
matter
future,
what.
Who, the future is unwritten, so we can be afraid of anything. So, yeah. That's why I think writing is.
It's about taking that leap into faith and saying.
Is.
You know, and also I think saying, okay, so I'm going to screw it up. It's inevitable. I remember being so heartened recently by a quote, George Orwell quote, where he was interviewed somewhere and he said, you know, I haven't written a novel for 7 years, but I think I'm going to be writing one soon. I'm sure it'll be a failure because every novel's a failure. And I loved that quote. I was so happy when I found that. I was like, oh, every novel's a failure. That's so great. You know, that gets me off the hook. I don't have to pretend that it's not going to be a failure. So I posted it on my Facebook page, and you know, I got all sorts of, sort of appalled responses to this.
Right.
I was like, well, what's all this negative thinking? And, of course, you know, you can't think that way. You can't go, you know, it's like, no, you don't understand. This is liberating, you know, to sort of embrace the failure inherent in these creative undertakings is, it's great because
no matter
if you
what,
try to avoid those mistakes,
right.
you're just sunk.
Yes.
I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah, because you can't, no matter what, it's not going to be done.
No.
Complete, perfect. It's impossible.
No, never. No, I look back at my, you know, my first book and I can't even look at it. It's like, ugh. You know, and it doesn't matter how many people say they loved it. I think of all the other ways that I could have done it. And, so you just have to let go. You know, there it is. It exists in the world. There's 50 other ways I could have written it. I didn't. I wrote it this way. Move on. You know,
absolutely.
Go to the next thing.
And you're also seeing it with the eyes of a writer who grew through that writing experience.
That's right.
And you are not the same. You know more now. Your perspective on life and writing has broadened since the writing of that. And so there's nothing you can do. And that's why you don't want to look back on it, because you want to look at the next thing you're going to do. Because that's what you're meant to be doing now, not that anymore. That's the old, that's a different Dory, really.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true.
Yeah, you see? See, it's just a life lesson. I tell you, writing, my two greatest teachers in life, for sure, have been my youngest son, who I wrote the book about, and writing. Writing has taught me being an author. Really, trying to share my work. Because if it was just writing, if it was just me and the page and nobody else, it'd be incredibly simple.
Yeah.
But it's never, you know, I want to share it with people.
Never the case. And it's funny that you name those two things, because I agree. It's sort of like parenting and writing, or really any artistic endeavor, you have to let go of your perfectionism. You're just not going to get it right. There's always going to be another way you could have done it. There's no real science behind it. It's a felt exercise, and you bumble your way through. So I think that's, you know, parenting and writing are very analogous in that way.
Yes, because the thing about the child that's hard to remember, that I constantly have to remember, especially with my youngest son who has some odd approaches to things, is that no matter what he does, and of course he's, you know, I've done plenty of odd things in my life too, that didn't look so good from the outside. But no matter what he's doing, and I use just him as just one example, but within him, he has an inherent integrity that exists within every person. You know, that there is a completeness to him, and he's searching for his best expression. And as a parent, as much as I try to guide and instruct and support, the thing I have to constantly do is remember that he that integrity exists, and to some degree, it's beyond my knowing. You
right.
know, it's bigger than I can possibly grasp in my little mind.
Right.
Maybe feel it. You know, maybe feel it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly can't know it. You know, like I know 2 + 2 = 4.
And so you think that's true of every person and maybe every book as well?
Yep. I think so.
It has its own sense, its own integrity. And
yeah, its own kind of inherent integrity.
As soon as you start trying to dissect it,
it falls apart.
Yeah. I remember when I was trying to rewrite my first book, I'd written a draft of it, and I knew it needed a massive rewrite, and I was so discouraged, and I was just thinking, I don't know if I can do this, and I spoke to a good friend of mine, Peter Levitt, who's a wonderful poet, and he said, Dory, just love the one you're with, you know, just love the book you have,
yeah.
just love it, just embrace it, it's, you know, in all of its disappointingness, you know, just love it. So it was a really interesting exercise for me to say, okay, this is the one. This is the book I'm writing right now. It's not any other book, and it's not going to be perfect, and it's not going to be the one that I want it to be in my ideal vision of life. And
right.
You know, and it was really amazing when I was able to do that. It helped me to finish it.
But doesn't that extend out to the rest of your life too? I mean,
it does. It's a huge
lesson. Just so much. It goes beyond just learning how to create characters on a page.
Right, and yet, Bill, I can't seem to really learn it.
I keep having to relearn it.
Even
a little
it. You
bit.
I'm getting there, but it's like this new one that I'm working on. I look at it and I go, ah, this is horrible. You know, what are you doing?
All right,
you know, what's the story about? It's like I'm really kind of thick-headed when it comes to learning this.
Now listen to me. Every writer, I could give you a list an arm long of all the writers I've talked to, including one of my favorite stories is of Louis Sachar talking to Judy Blume, who's published 100 novels.
Right.
Louis Sachar wrote Holes, which just was fabulous.
Yeah.
Writer. And he'd written his next book. He turned to her and said, he told me this story when I interviewed him. He said to Judy Blume, do you ever finish a book and wonder if it's any good at all? And she turned to him and said, every one.
Every single one.
That's Judy Blume.
Yeah.
Believe me.
That's very encouraging.
This is so much the part of writing. It's so,
yeah.
And you just can't get too caught up in the drama of it. That's, I think, the only mistake.
That's right. You just have to say, okay, this is part of it. Here we go again. And
you
people
can
who
a
don't
lot of
write
time
really
saying,
don't quite understand that either. I saw my mother recently, and she said, you know, so are you happy with what you've written on this book so far? I said, Mom, I'm never happy with anything I write. And she said, well, why do you do
it works,
that?
Mom.
Yeah, why are you doing it? It sounds horrible, you know, what a miserable profession, you know. So I was like, yeah, so in some ways, and in some ways it's just really magical and great, because when you get through that, it does. It opens you to all the other ways that you need to learn that in your life. It's quite something.
It is. It's very humbling. It's really taught me, it's really revealed my relationship. Mm-hmm. My relationship to my ego, I have to say.
To your ego, too,
God, that damn thing. It's been...
Very dangerous territory.
Oh, God, it is, but it was necessary. Well, listen, Dory, this 30 minutes went by far quicker than I wish it had, but it's been just a pleasure talking to you.
It was great fun. Thank you, Bill.
Please let us know when you finish it, because I know you will. Best of luck, and when you do, I want to have you back on the show, and we'll talk about how that went.
Thank you, and I look forward to reading your book.
Okay, well, I'll let everybody know when the time comes. Thanks again, Dory.
Okay, bye-bye.
And thank you all for listening. What a great conversation. You see, the books we write, the lives we lead, these two things are one and the same. So write what you love and live what you love, and I don't think you can really go wrong. I will see you next week when I'll be talking to John Land, suspense writer, and always entertaining John Land. Until then, do what you love.